I'm not a climate scientist.
I'm not a climate scientist.
I'm not a climate scientist either.
Yo, we're climate scientists, and there's no denying this. Climate change is real. Who's a climate scientist? I'm a climate scientist. Not a Clio finalist, no, a climate scientist. Dropping facts all over this blast. While business be crying about a carbon tax. Climate change is caused by people. Earth on like alien has no sequel. We gotta move fast or we'll be forsaken.
Cause we were too busy sucking things in Copenhagen.
Hey, it's hot in here. 32% more carbon in the atmosphere. Ice,
raising sea levels twice by twice. We're scientists, what we speak is true. Unlike Andrew Bolt, our work is peer-reviewed. Hey! Who's a climate scientist? I'm a climate scientist, an Anglican revivalist. No, a climate scientist.
Feeding back, like climate change on crack. Permafrost subtracts.
Feedback.
Methane release is whack.
Feedback.
Write a letter, then burn it.
Feedback.
Deny, let's deny this in your dreams. Cause climate change means greater extremes. Heat won't be the norm, heat waves bigger, bad as storm.
The greenhouse effect is just a theory, sucker.
Yes, so is gravity. Float away, mother floater!
Who's a climate scientist? I'm a climate scientist. A penny farthing cyclist? No, a climate scientist.
A Fox News journalist?
No!
A paleontologist?
No!
A clean coal lobbyist?
No!
Hello and welcome to Great Speeches and Interviews on Axis Sacramento and The Voice. I'm Steve Lerman. Our program starts out with Elizabeth Colbert, who comments on humanity, which is driving a great wave of extinctions around the planet. Elizabeth Colbert is a staff writer for The New Yorker. And after that, Ronald Wright, What is Progress? Author Ronald Wright says understanding humanity's pattern of progress and disaster will help us avoid the collapse of civilization as we know it. Ronald is interviewed by Pia Chattopadhyay. And then after that, Tom Hanks' Vassar commencement speech in 2005.
I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. Over half a billion years of life on Earth, there have been five great eras of extinction. Each saw dramatic destruction of species and diversity. Humans have only understood extinction for a few hundred years. Now we're creating one of our own, the sixth extinction. This hour On Point, Elizabeth Colbert on Earth's sixth extinction and the species that's bringing it on. Us. You can join us on air or online where this conversation is always on. How's it feel to be a co-author of a great extinction of life? Do you believe it? Will we stop it? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. Later this hour, we'll look at the death of Kentucky snake handler Pastor Jamie Coots and the faith and culture of snake handling. But first, extinction. Joining me from Los Angeles is Elizabeth Colbert, staff writer for The New Yorker. Her 2006 book was Field Notes from a Catastrophe, Man, Nature, and Climate Change. Her new book is The Sixth Extinction, An Unnatural History. Elizabeth Colbert, welcome back to On Point.
Thanks for having me.
Put what we're in the midst of right now in the context of the five that came before. How much of life was lost in those? How much of life is at risk in ours, the sixth?
Well, the five previous major mass extinctions, and somewhat oxymoronically, you can have a minor mass extinction too, but the five that you alluded to are sometimes called the big five, mm-hmm. and I guess a very rough figure would be that in those extinctions, something like a quarter of all species on Earth, I'm sorry, three quarters of all species on Earth disappeared rather quickly. Right now, we're obviously nowhere near that figure, and the question, as you raised it at the beginning of the hour, is what we're going to do to avoid that. How's that?
So are we in a major or a minor extinction? The sixth that we're authoring ourselves, you say?
Well, one thing that's sort of important, I think, to keep in mind is people have become inured to extinction. We hear about extinction a lot. This animal went extinct, that animal went extinct. Very recently, for example, the river dolphin in China was declared extinct, for example. And we see tend to think that that's just sort of, you know, the way things go or just part of life. But if you know, if in the course of a human lifetime of, you know, 70, 80, even 90 years, you can identify species that have gone extinct in your lifetime, it actually means that something extremely unusual is going on. So right now, you know, extinction rates are very, very high, way, way higher than what is called background rate, which is discerned by going through the fossil record and trying to figure out how fast species could go extinct. So you hear a sort of general figure that maybe we're 1,000 times background rate and maybe we're heading towards 10,000 times.
Yet my question stands because you call this the sixth. So by your numbering system, you put it directly in the company of the five. So tell us that in those five, 3/4 of species were lost, which suggests that we're on a path towards something like that now. So it makes a difference if it's 1/100th or 1/4 or 3/4, doesn't it?
It absolutely does. And I should point out, I don't call it the sixth extinction. It's been termed the sixth extinction. And I say very, very early in the book that it became known that before it was really clear whether we were going to hit the level of the five previous mass extinctions. And you will talk to many very, very knowledgeable scientists who say, yes, if we continue on the path that we're on, we could very easily, you know, hit those sorts of rates. And other people disagree. When you're in the midst of something, it's sometimes very, very difficult to tell. But to say that we're in an extinction, a very serious extinction event, heading towards very, very high numbers. I'm going to stick with that. How's that? And whether we're ever going to reach the level of the previous five is something, you know, none of us will know in our lifetime.
So if we stay on this course, that's something to imagine in itself for hundreds of years. I don't know what that would look like. But in this century, what's the scale of extinction you're describing?
Well, people have looked at projections. I mean, what are some of the big drivers of extinction right now? They are probably climate change, ocean acidification. One of the things that we're doing, one of the ways that we're changing the planet very, very quickly by putting a lot of carbon dioxide into the atmosphere. We're actually also putting a lot of carbon dioxide into the oceans, and this has the effect when carbon dioxide dissolves in water, it forms an acid. It's a weak acid, but it's an acid, and we are changing the chemistry of the oceans. That's absolutely indisputable. It's measurable. So when people say when we continue on this path, what they mean in part is if we continue to, you know, burn fossil fuels and emit a lot of CO2 into the atmosphere. And people have tried to model what will happen by the end of the century. And you get, you know, pretty wide ranges of estimates depending on how you imagine species being able to move in response to climate change. So many, many species are now on the move because they're trying to keep up with the climate, which is changing very, very rapidly. And once again, that is something that's been very well documented. So figures tend to be in the order, on the order, and now I'm talking even just in the middle of the century, on the order of, you know, somewhere 10-20%, people will say will be committed to extinction. Those are the sorts of numbers that we're talking about.
10 or 20% of existing species today on a path to extinction by in 30, 40 years from now?
Yes, exactly. Because their climate regime that they depend on will be disappearing.
That seems pretty huge and pretty fast. What
yes,
are the most vulnerable categories of species?
Well, we have right now the most endangered class of organisms around turns out to be amphibians. The reasons for that are not entirely clear. Amphibians are threatened by climate change. They're threatened, obviously, by habitat destruction. They're threatened whenever waterways are altered or simply diverted. But they seem to be very, very seriously being impacted by a fungus, a disease that was almost certainly imported around the world by people moving amphibians around the world. So they are a very, very threatened group of organisms. Reef-building corals are threatened. Sharks and rays are under threat. Mammals, about 1/4 of all mammals, are now classified as endangered currently as we speak. About 1/6 of all birds are classified as endangered. So we only have, in fact, really good figures for those groups that we know very well. So we have a pretty good handle, for example, on how many species of mammals are on the planet right now, although we do occasionally find even a new species of mammal. But when you look... Yeah, sorry, go ahead.
Well, just that you spent a lot of time in the field on this book, 4 years, traveled all over the place. I want to bring to mind, to our mind's eye, some of the most arresting settings that you witnessed of where the human imprint is crushing species.
Well, paradoxically, in the course of reporting this book, which was about the idea, you know, that you can't go anywhere on the planet without finding human impacts. I actually went to some of the most fantastic and relatively unspoiled places on the planet. For example, the Great Barrier Reef, the Amazon rainforest.
Lucky you.
A cloud forest in Peru. Now, one place that I went where very, very vividly you could see human impacts is a cave in Vermont, not really very far from where I live, as it happens, mm-hmm. where another disease, a pathogen, another fungal pathogen, once again, in this case, certainly introduced by people, is devastating the bat populations of the northeastern United States. So we went into this cave where bats hibernate. Literally hundreds of thousands of bats used to hibernate in this cave because in the winter in the northeast, bats hibernate. They hang by their toes and they go into a state almost of suspended animation. And when this disease hit, the bats just started dying really literally by the millions. And we went into this bat cave and the floor was just a carpet of dead bats. It was a sort of extraordinary scene of carnage, like a bit like a what I imagine a battlefield, which I'm happy to say I've never been in.
But and the
but
cause a in this case,
the cause is once again similar, interestingly, to amphibians. Bats are being devastated by a fungal disease. In this case, we have a pretty good idea that it came from Europe. It probably came over unsuspectingly with some tourist from Europe who brought it to upstate New York. We could watch this unfold, you know, in real time. We've absolutely watched this disease spread out. It's now in 22 states and in much of Canada, and it has devastated bat populations.
Hi, I'm Steve Lerman. I'm the guy that produces, edits, narrates, and promotes Great Speeches and Interviews. I'm the guy responsible for airing in-depth interviews, speeches, and even debates on controversial subjects such as war and peace and climate change and the economy. I hope you like listening to it as much as I like producing it. Access Sacramento broadcasts it on the internet every Sunday from 6 to 8 p.m. And you can find the podcast at greatspeechesandinterviews.blogspot.com as well as at Facebook.
Come gather around, people, wherever you roam, and admit that the waters around you have grown, and accept it that soon you'll be drenched to the bone. If your time to you is worth saving, then you better start swimming or you'll sink like a stone. For the times, they are a-changing. Come writers and critics who prophesize with your pen, and keep your eyes wide, the chance won't come again. And don't speak too soon, for the wheel's still in spin. And there's no telling who that it's naming. For the loser now will be later to win. For the times, they are a-changing. Senators, congressmen, please heed the call. Don't stand in the doorway, don't lock up the hall. For he that gets hurt will be he who has stalled. The battle outside raging will soon shake your windows and rattle your walls. For the times, they are a-changing. Mothers and fathers throughout the land, and don't criticize what you can't understand. Your sons and your daughters are beyond your command. Your old road is rapidly aging. Please get out of the new one if you can't lend your hand. For the times, they are a-changing. It is drawn, the curse it is cast. The slow one now will later be fast, as the present now will later be past. The order is rapidly fading, and the first one now will later be last. For the times, they are a-changing.
And now back to Elizabeth Colbert and Tom Ashbrook.
There's the idea throughout this book that somehow, I mean, what you're looking at there is not climate change, though you could say jet travel is related to it. It's simply dramatic human mobility. And the idea that shows up all over this book is that it's the very advance of one species, the human species, which has somehow brought with it almost intrinsically the vulnerability and maybe extinction of many others.
Yes, one of the themes of the book is simply that people are agents of change. We are extremely innovative, we're extremely creative, we're extremely cooperative, and we build these huge societies, and we have, at this point, this remarkable technology. But even before we had, you know, sort of remarkable technologies, we already had, in a sense, escaped the pace of evolution. We didn't have to wait to evolve a claw or a sharper tooth to go after new sorts of prey. So we do not operate on the timescale of evolution where virtually every other species on the planet does. So when humans arrived in a new place, very often the fauna was devastated pretty quickly.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about the new great age of extinction, our age now, with humans as the cause. Elizabeth Colbert is with us. Her new book is The Sixth Extinction, a lonely beaver behind us there in central Minnesota. Game wardens blew up a beaver dam there. Maybe the plaintive sound of what Elizabeth Colbert is describing in her new book, The Sixth Extinction. You can join the conversation this hour. What's your question for Elizabeth Colbert on what's going on out there? Do you see species moving, faltering, dying where you live? And will we, humans, move to contain this extinction or let it rip? There's a front piece in your book, Elizabeth. It quotes E.O. Wilson, and it's disturbing, fascinating to contemplate. He writes, "If there is a danger in the human trajectory, it is not so much in the survival of our own species as in the fulfillment of the ultimate irony of organic evolution, that in the instant of achieving self-understanding through the mind of man, life has doomed its most beautiful creations." Do you believe that, Elizabeth?
Well, I certainly think that there's a lot of truth to it. That's why I put it at the front of the book. And really no one has written more eloquently and more knowledgeably about the natural world in recent years than Ed Wilson. So I think we have to take pretty much whatever he says very, very seriously.
I mean, that goes to a very deep philosophical, even religious, if you're a believer, kind of, you know, it's that divine spark that we call it of that's made man, you know, master of all he, she sees, for better and, as you describe, for worse. I mean, is this the flaw? Is this the ultimate flaw? Are we the doom in the scheme of life? It seems to be what E.O. Wilson's saying.
Yes, I mean, he's taking a pretty, but as he says, it's the ultimate irony. It's not it's not a straightforward, you know, good or bad, how's that?
And I think it hardly makes it more palatable if it really is the doom of Earth's most beautiful creations.
Well, intelligence has turned out to be, you know, a fascinating a consciousness, a fascinating and disturbing fact, I suppose. And many people have looked at, for example, even the question of whether if there's life, you know, on other planets, and if there's intelligent life there, how does intelligent life fare? And there's a very famous sort of equation, the Drake equation, which looks at the possibility of are there intelligent civilizations all around the universe? And the big variable, depending on whether, you know, to figure this out is, well, how long does an intelligent civilization last? So is intelligence even a lasting character? Is, you know, good for the intelligent species? Mm-hmm. And these are questions that people have contemplated, and we don't have really an answer, obviously.
Al Gore reviewed your book over the weekend for the New York Times. You know, he's beaten his head against the wall on climate change for a long time now. And he made the point that human beings are have perhaps limited, maybe tragically limited, psychological capacity for absorbing really rough news. You spent 4 years out in the field on this book. Now you're talking with everybody about it. What's your sense of the never mind the economic and the intellectual, but the psychological capacity for humans to absorb the reality of extinction, death, and more than death, extinction on the scale that you're describing? Are we capable of taking it on board?
That's a really good question, and I think that, you know, Vice President Gore made the analogy to climate change, which is something that a phenomenon that very clearly poses a really significant threat to our society. Let's put it that way, not necessarily to our our survival, but to our societies and the ways that we've chosen, you know, to build our societies. And we seem to have a lot of trouble absorbing even that, even as we can see right now some of the consequences of that unfolding pretty dramatically. We still seem to have trouble wrapping our minds around that. So I guess you could say, you know, there are limits to our imaginations, and we seem to be bumping up against them.
Elizabeth Colbert's new book is The Sixth Extinction, An Unnatural History. Lots of callers for you, Elizabeth, in Los Angeles there. Joe in Harpers Ferry, Iowa. Joe, thank you for calling. You're on the air.
Hi. The last extinctions have been major physical events. This seems to be internal. I'm wondering, are we acting as a human species as a pathogen or a cause for an autoimmune response to our biosphere? And anecdotally, my wife is a veterinary nurse. She has been for almost 40 years. One of her close friends had the dubious honor of holding the last dusky seaside sparrow in her hands when it died.
Mm.
And the concept of extinction is very sad in that respect, but inevitable to some extent for all of us.
Well, the inevitability, yeah, that's a really moving story to hold the last dusky seaside sparrow. And actually, I should point out that one of the things I did in this book was actually go out and get up close to some species that are really, really on the edge. For example, the Sumatran rhino, of which there are 100 left in the world. And I got to hang out with one of them, who's a wonderful, wonderful creature. Suchi, her name is, and she lives at the Cincinnati Zoo. But the question of whether extinction is inevitable, you know, over the long span of history, the vast, vast, vast majority of species are extinct now. Absolutely. I think that what distinguishes, you know, mass extinctions and moments of very high extinction rates is that extinction is happening way, way faster than new species can evolve. So obviously when you get that mismatch, when extinction is happening very quickly, but speciation is still taking the same amount of time, you're going to get a dramatic drop in diversity. So that is what is happening right now.
Until the philosophy which old one race superior and another inferior is finally and permanently discredited and abandoned, where everywhere is war. It's a war. And until there's no longer first class nor second class citizens of any nation, until the color of a man's skin is of no more significance to the color of his eyes, I've got to say why. And until the basic human rights are equally guaranteed to all without regard to race, it's a war. But until that day, dream of lasting peace, world a citizenship, and the rule of international morality, yeah, will remain in but a fleeting illusion to be pursued, but never attained, where everywhere is war. The ignoble and unhappy regime that hold our brothers in South Africa, Namibia, in subhuman bondage, have been toppled, utterly downstroyed, then everywhere is war. War down south. Yes, it's a war, herald a rumors of war. Yes, them war, oh, the rumors of war. Yes, until that day, the African continent will not know peace.
We Africans will fight, we find it necessary. We know we shall win. We are confederations into victory. Of good over evil. Of good over evil. Of good over evil. Where everywhere is war. War in the east. War in the west. War up north. War down south. Yes, them war, 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 them war. Yes, them war. Some crying, some dying, some winning, some losing, singing. We don't need. Oh no, 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 no more trouble. We don't need. No, 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 no. No more trouble. No more troubles, children. No more troubles. Hey, what we need is love to guide and protect us on. So if you're up, look down from above. Help the weak if you are strong. We don't need no trouble. What we need is love. Oh, children, come on and speak of love.
Stand up without your voice.
You see, we don't need no trouble. Stop. What we need is love.
And now for something completely different.